Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all levels of professional baseball to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, the Tool Shed podcast has you covered with rankings, player analysis, and in-depth discussion. And now, here's your host, Eric Cross.
What's up, everyone? Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed Podcast, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 438. Thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Eric Cross. You can find me on Twitter at EricCrossMLB, and the show is at Tool Shed Pod. Kicking off pitching week here on the Tool Shed with our pitching prospect rankings. Have a great guest with me to break it all down. He is a writer at Fantasy Pros, creator of F-Scores, father of five, building his own little starting nine right there, and host of the Prospect Warehouse podcast, Mr. Tim Kanak at Fantasy Aceball on Twitter. Tim, how's it going, man?
Good. Happy to be with you here today. We're recording before the Super Bowl, so exciting stuff here right before the Super Bowl, getting some baseball talk in. So definitely pumped for that.
Yeah, like what is there better to do on the biggest football day of the year than talk baseball, right? I mean,
yeah, it's either pregame the Super Bowl right now and just get wasted, or it is talk a little baseball first and then watch the football game.
Yep. I mean, I'll absolutely be watching it in a few hours. It's about 2:15 or so on the East Coast right now as we start recording. Games in, you know, four and a half hours, whatever. I'm a Patriots fan, so I'll have rooting interest, and I'll either be, when this episode, you're listening to it tomorrow, I'll either be very excited or very pissed off, one of the two. We will find out, but always excited to talk some baseball and especially some pitching prospects, because the pitching prospect ranks right now are incredibly, incredibly exciting. A lot of elite talents, and a lot of which will be, you know, have already debuted or will be debuting here in 2026. So a good group of prospects to talk about. Before we get into all of that, though, the usual housekeeping. If you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review. You can find all of my content either on Rotoballer or over on my Patreon, toolshedfantasy.com. And you got to check out all the great content over on Rotoballer with Rotoballer's Premium Pass. If you sign up today, you get 30% off using promo code NEW. There's so much great content on there. And what, you know, again, all of my content is over there on Rotoballer. And, you know, you got Nick Mariano's rankings. You got Ariel Cohen's ATC projections. So many great tools. You know, some of the tools you could be using right now. You know, you get some mock drafts in. You can do that over on Rotoballer. You got live draft assistant. You can sync your teams, get custom rankings. So many great things over there on Rotoballer. So check that out over at rotoballer.com/MLB. And again, 30% off using promo code NEW. All right, let's go into our rankings here with the top 10. Actually, before we do so, I want to ask you a quick question here, you know, Tim, because as we know, pitching is very, very risky. I mean, we see all these names, you know, have injuries usually early in their career. So it's actually kind of rare when you see a big name not have some sort of injury risk attached to them. But you know, given the elevated risk of pitching prospects, especially, you know, how do you approach, you know, assembling pitching prospects, or just how do you approach them in general in your dynasty leagues? Are you a little bit, you know, more risk adverse and go more hitting prospects? Just how do you approach them in dynasty leagues, Tim?
It's like, especially for relief pitchers, I feel like, and I don't even talk about relief pitchers, who really cares about relief pitchers in dynasty? But for starters, I definitely see them as like shorter term ads, right? Like, of course, if I'm building a farm, I'm going to be very heavy on hitters earlier and kind of just focus on pitching depth. You get a lot of these like pop-up pitchers who come up and are really good, and then all of a sudden there's a ton of value. Like Brian Wu, who was he as a prospect, right? Like nobody was really talking about him until like right before he was promoted. And then I was like, whoa, where'd this guy come from? And now he's like a top 10 starter. Right. And I feel like there's a lot of starters like that. Like even like Spencer Strider before he popped up, like he was kind of seen as like a back end, like top 100, if anything, even back then, like 100, 150 type prospect, and then comes on and boom, all of a sudden, just a beast. So unless it's like some of these guys where there's just like ridiculous, obvious talent, I'm kind of more of a quantity over quality guy a lot of the times with starting pitchers, because you have to have a give and take in Dynasty. So like, if I'm going to focus on like higher end prospects, I want those to be the hitters. And then I'll just like take my darts with pitchers, like because that's what it is a lot of the time. It's like because it could be an injury that takes them out, or it could be like if a prospect pitcher gets Tommy John, they have like no value when they're hurt. Like it's very low value. Like we'll talk about Sakura later, but like that's a whole thing right now. But there's a lot of guys where they're just like Braxton Bragg was one of the better pitchers earlier last year, has to get Tommy John. I just did a 30-team draft, and Braxton Bragg was like one of the last guys picked in that. So it's like if you have a Tommy John, if you're a pitcher with Tommy John, you just kind of fall off the face of the earth for a little bit until you come back. So, it's a little bit of dart throwing with some of those guys, and I prefer not to waste my high darts, my best darts on pitchers when I could, you know, get a really good hitter that's more likely to hit than the pitcher.
Yeah, I'm pretty similar in my approach with pitching prospects. You know, I use them more as trade capital than anything else. You know, I'll try to get some upside guys that aren't a high price tag, when they're maybe like in low A or even, the complex level or whatever. And then, hopefully if a couple of them turn into, top 100 guys or whatever, then I usually, look to trade them off for, maybe an MLB piece or whatever. But yeah, I definitely focus more on hitting prospects. Like I've always kind of gone with the rough like 70-30 rule where, if I have, 10 prospects, seven of them are going to be hitters and maybe all three upside pitchers or something like that. But yeah, it's so risky. And we've seen even like if you were sitting with, like think back to like 3-4 years ago and say you had like Ricky Tiedemann and Daniel Espino, you probably were ecstatic back then. Look at it now. So, yeah, that just kind of goes to show. I mean, and you can say that with a lot of other guys too. But yeah, I use them more as trade capital. And yeah, I usually don't trade for a top pitching prospect. If I draft a guy, whether it be FYPD or I get them when their price tag is a lot lower and they turn into one, great. But yeah, you won't see me like, trading for. I'm not going to be trading right now for a Robbie Snelling for the most part or something like that, or a Jonah Tong. I'll try to get these guys when they're, not quite as high of a price tag. But, yeah, it's not a perfect science, but, pitching is just very, very finicky. So I love talking about the approach behind assembling your pitching prospects in Dynasty. Let's get into the rankings now. Top 10. So who are those top 10 guys for you, Tim?
I've got Chase Burns number one, and talking about pushing guys down, he's still my number three prospect. That's how much I like Chase Burns. Nolan McLean is two, Thomas White is three, Trey Savage is four, Robbie Snelling is five, Cade Anderson is six, Peyton Tolley is seven, Jonah Tong is eight, Bubba Chandler nine, and Andrew Painter 10.
All right, for me, I also have Chase Burns one. I know some of you out there are like, oh, he graduated. Yeah, he did when you look at, service time, but I only go by 130 and 50 just because I think a lot of fantasy leagues only go by 130 and 50, so I just make it easy and not to try to figure out service time. That's a pain in the butt. So Chase Burns at one for me. I also have McLean at two. I think they're pretty, I won't say universal, but close to it. The top two pitching prospects, if you include Burns in the mix. And I have them at three and four overall in my top 500, respectively. Three through five for me is Trey Savage, Thomas White, and Bubba Chandler. Six through 10, I got Jonah Tong, Cade Anderson, Peyton Tolley, Seth Hernandez, and Robbie Snelling at 10. And all those guys are within my top 50 overall. Snelling's at 45 overall for me right now, and I got one more in my top 50 that we'll get to in a little bit, but let's start with that dynamic duo at the top of Chase Burns and Nolan McLean. Both came up and had pretty exciting debuts. McLean 2.06 ERA, 1.04 whip in eight starts with a 30% K rate, 8.5% walk rate. That was in 48 innings for the Mets, so he is going to go over eligibility in his first start of the season. Chase Burns in 43 and a third, ratios are a little higher, 4.57 and 1.32, but all of the ERA indicators were, over a run lower, including a 3.48 xERA. and he had a 35.5% strikeout rate, 8.5% walk rate. So that's a 27.1 K minus walk rate. That is just elite. 67 strikeouts in just 43 and a third innings. So both these guys, phenomenal arm talents, you know, enormous upside. But where do you think, you know, obviously they're being their first full season here in 2026, Tim, you know, where do you think Burns and McLean end up like rising to like in ranking? So do you think these are two guys that we're looking at, you know, maybe even next year as no doubt aces for fantasy baseball?
Yeah, I would almost view Chase Burns as that now. I have him as a top 15 starter for this year just for redraft. And for Dynasty, he's my number six starting pitcher in Dynasty. McLean, I'm a little bit lower on. He doesn't have the same upside that Burns does for strikeouts. I've got him at 12. But I like for Dynasty. So it's like, obviously, if I have him at 12, that means that I think he's going to be a fantasy ace sometime within the next couple of years here, right? So I love both of these guys. Very different reasons. So completely different type players, right? Like Chase Burns is almost a two-pitch pitcher. I guess against righties, he really is. So against righties, he threw his fastball 55% of the time and the slider 44% of the time. What does that leave? That leaves 1% of other pitches. So against righties, he really is a two-pitch guy. Against lefties, he pulls up the changeup and throws that like 10% of the time. But as far as like pitch values, like that slider might be the best slider in baseball already. And that fastball is probably like a top five fastball too. Yep. So you're looking at like two elite pitches here for Chase Burns. Can you get by on two pitches? That's the question, right? Like, will he be able to get by full time as a more or less like two pitch guy? If he doesn't, you know, like, I guess against the against lefties. Yeah. Change up at 10%. Maybe he develops it and can throw more. He probably should get a third pitch that he can throw against righties as he's developing. Like, he's still young, so there's still time for that. But what we saw from him in the small sample size is already really elite. And like, this is a crazy stat right here. I'm going to pump Nick Pollock's mistake rate stat right here. So he was 12th overall in mistake rate, 2.6% from a rookie pitcher, which mistake rate is like, you know, how often are they throwing like a bad pitch in the zone is what that is basically. Like, how often are you going to leave a hanger in the zone or whatever? And it's like, how does a rookie do that? Because like what a lot of people are concerned about with Chase Burns, especially in Great American Small Park, is potentially like him giving up home runs. But like, if he's already not leaving mistakes in the zone as a rookie, that's pretty insane.
Yeah, that is really, really exciting for Chase Burns. I mean, yeah, he gives me, you know, Spencer Strider vibes. I think that, you know, comparison is pretty easy. You know, two pitch guy, you know, coming up, but two dominant pitches. I mean, he had, again, 67 strikeouts, 62 of those were either on the four seamer or slider, with four on the changeup and one on the curveball. But you know, curveball overall, like you mentioned, it was a sub 1% usage rate pretty much on that. You know, I love the slider. I mean, I agree. It's one of the best sliders in baseball. Four seamer averaged 98.7. Like, everything's hard with Chase Burns. Even the changeup averaged 91 miles an hour. And that was actually a decent pitch when he used it. 182 batting average against, 33% whiff rate. So decent third offering there against lefties. But I agree, I would love to see him add any third pitch against righties, whether it be maybe he goes with that curveball more, or maybe adds a cutter, or even uses the changeup more, whatever it may be. I would just love to see a third offering against righties, even 10%. Just give me something else so they're not sitting on just four seam and slider, though. Again, elite pitches, but on those days where one of those two ain't working for whatever reason, as we've seen with Strider, you know, it can turn, you know, it can get kind of ugly. So that's the one concern I have with Burns. You know, obviously the ballpark isn't the greatest, but you know, the stuff is just so elite. And like, you look at the similar pitchers to him based on velo and movement on Savant, three of them are Jacob deGrom, Hunter Green, and Dylan Cease. So that's pretty darn good there. And with McLean, I mean, you know, the fact that he's already kind of where he is in both, you know, prospect and dynasty ranks after really having 2025 be his first full year of solely focusing on pitching, because he was a two-way guy through 2024, is pretty impressive. And he gets plenty of ground balls. Like, You know, Burns gives up a little too much contact in the air, which can be a little bit of a concern at times, but McQueen gets plenty of ground balls. You know, maybe doesn't have quite the bat missing that Burns does, but still a pretty darn good, you know, bat misser in his own right. So, yeah, I have them currently 13 and 14 in my dynasty rankings. I think they're in a big, you know, tier three glob or tier two glob, really. You know, like Freddie Peralta, Logan Webb, you know, a lot of those guys, Cole Reagans. It's a pretty fun tier, but they're already right up in there being rookies this year. So, yeah, I think they both can be top 10, you know, dynasty arms long term. And, yeah, I don't think they throw on that ace term very often. I think it gets thrown on way too lightly these days. But, yeah, I think McLean and Burns are going to be guys that we're looking at as fantasy aces for a long time. And those are the two that I feel really good about saying that about in terms of prospects right now. There are a few others that, you know, could be or high end twos, like the Savages, the Whites, the Chandlers of the world. But if you're looking at guys that I feel like really 100% confident about using that ace tag for, it's Burns and McLean. But the next guy here, probably the top guy or my top pitching prospect that has yet to debut, because what, six of my top eight have already debuted, but Thomas White has not, but probably will at some point later on this summer. He is coming off a phenomenal year in the upper minors, got up to AAA for two starts, 10 starts in AA, and nine in high A. Overall had a 2.31 ERA and 145 strikeouts in just 89 and two-thirds innings. But despite having that elite K rate, which was 38.6%, that's just ridiculous right there, and having a 2.31 ERA, you know, the whip, 118, a little bit higher than you'd imagine for a 2.31 ERA, but that's largely due to a 13.5% walk rate, which is, for me, when you get above like 11, 12, I get pretty concerned. But obviously the stuff is elite here with Thomas White, Tim. But are you concerned with the, you know, kind of the really high walk rate that he had this past year? How concerning is that for you long-term when valuing a Thomas White?
You know, not really. And it's kind of funny because Doc and I, on one of our podcasts, we were actually talking about Carson Milbrandt, right? And we're like, man, Milbrandt's control, I don't know, like, if he'll ever figure it out, because, you know, his success is going to depend on the control. And then Doc was like, you know, it's funny, Thomas White has a higher walk rate than Carson Milbrandt. And I was like, what? No way. And I looked and it's true. And I was just like, wow, I didn't even realize, because if you just look at his K minus walk, he has so many strikeouts. If you're only looking at K minus walk, you won't even notice that his walk rate is as high as it is. So that's a very good question that you're bringing up. But I'll tell you, I'm lucky enough that I've seen Thomas White live a number of times, because, you know, I live in Jupiter, Florida, which is where the Florida Marlins A-ball team is located. And that's also where they have their spring training. So I've seen Thomas White coming up here for a number of years, and I've been able to see his progression. Like, when I saw him this last spring, I was like, wow, he's like way better than when I was seeing him in A-ball. Now that I'm seeing him in spring, like, he's just so much better. He had improved a lot just over that 1 year. And I get to see him this spring now, so it's going to be fun. I'll be able to report to you guys, like, how, if you, you know, how much better he's looking. But since I've seen him live so many times, watching him in person, I had no concerns about his command. And I always like sit behind home kind of, and I try to get like an off home view so I can kind of see the strike zone. Like, I feel like his stuff, he knows where he's throwing it. Like, if he has a high walk rate, it's because he's doing that from like a Blake Snellish perspective, where it's like he's just walking a guy because, like, he's trying to strike dudes out. And if he's walking the guy, it's just because he's not going to give him a good pitch to hit. Like, I feel like it's his control. Like, we always have this difference between command and control, right? I feel like he has way better command than he does than he has control. Like, I feel like the pitches are going where he wants them to go. And yeah, maybe he's walking guys, but I feel like it's just a part of his game. He just like doesn't care. It's like, okay, there's a walk. Like, I didn't give up a homer, and I'm going to just strike out the next dude, and the walk won't matter. Like, it's just like a little bit of a Blake Snell mindset when he's attacking these hitters. It's kind of what I feel like. Cause I've watched him a bunch of times, and I've never felt like he feels like, oh, you know, like I don't have command of this. Like, the ball's not going where I want. I feel like it's just part of his strategy or whatever, watching him.
Yeah, and when you have a 172 batting average against, that kind of helps offset the higher walk rate a little bit. You know, and like a 118 whip is still not bad by any means. But and he had a 103 batting average against in AAA. Yeah, it was two starts, but it just shows like how good the stuff is. Like this is three plus pitches with Thomas White. I mean, he's got the really good fastball, you know, mid 90s, can touch higher, good riding life on that. And then, you know, might have the best, you know, combination of secondaries in the minor leagues, or at least in that discussion with his slider and his changeup, both being just elite, elite bat missing offerings. So yeah, it just, as long as he doesn't go worse than this, like he's up like 15, 16%. Yeah, I think even if he can keep it 11, 12%, you know, I usually don't like those guys, but when they have the bat missing upside, like the elite strikeout rate potential that Thomas White has, you know, I can live with that. Because you look at, he has in the last 2 years, 265 strikeouts in 185 and two thirds innings. That is just ridiculously elite, and had an ERA below three each year while making 21 starts each year. Now, while being, you know, pretty young for every level, you know, he was at, he was just 20 at end of last year. He didn't turn 21 until the tail end of September. So it'll be basically 21 this entire year. Again, likely debut at some point this summer. You know, Miami's opened up a couple of rotation spots there. Snelling's probably first in the pecking order, but White probably be a month or two behind him, and has much, much higher upside. So yeah, if he can keep the walk rate somewhat in check, I think Thomas White has, you know, elite, you know, ace upside as well for that Miami team. So
here's one additional note on White's command here. On the F scores, we have a 104 control, so it's still above average. And when we're doing the F scores, the algo is based off of individual pitches. So it's not based off of like a walk rate, like are you walking guys? It's based off of strikes versus balls, like on an individual pitch level. So like the second half last year, he had a 52% strike rate and only a 38% ball rate. The difference is going to be balls in play there if you're doing the math on that. So 52% strike rate for like non-balls in play is actually pretty high.
Awesome. Yeah, that's... And for what it's worth, he had a 9.2% walk rate in 2024, which is not bad at all. So, yeah, Thomas White, just absolute stud arm here. Be real excited to see him up with the Miami Marlins later this season. The other name we wanted to talk about here in the top 10, because I feel like out of all the elite, like top 10 pitching prospect arms right now, this guy, I'm seeing a pretty wide range of opinions on him, just given the fact that he dominated in the minor leagues last year, got up to the majors, and had, you know, a handful of, you know, underwhelming starts. And that's Jonah Tong with the New York Mets. You know, in the minor leagues, mostly double A, a couple triple A starts mixed in. He had a 1.43 ERA and a 0.92 whip with a 10.6% walk rate and a 40.5% strikeout rate. Actually, him and Yesavage had the two highest strikeout rates, I think, since, I think Grayson Rodriguez and Daniel Espino both had like 41-ish percent back in 2021, I believe it was. So, you know, two of the highest strikeout rates we've seen in the minor leagues in the last half decade. But then he got up to the majors, and in five starts with the Mets, had a 7.71 ERA, though the ERA indicators were, you know, mostly in the fours there. But a 7.71 ERA and a 1.77 whip with a 10.3% walk rate and a 25.3% strikeout rate. I mean, he's kind of buried a little bit on the Mets, you know, rotational depth chart, you know, though, you know, a couple guys being traded away definitely helps. You know, Sprout's out of town now, so one less guy he has to, you know, contend with. But right now, looking like he probably is back in AAA to start the year. But, you know, Tim, given the, you know, huge, you know, dominant minor league season we saw from Jonah Tong, and then, you know, the rough five-start stint with the Mets, how are you valuing, you know, his 2025 season? Obviously, you're still high on him. You have him top 10. But what are your thoughts here on Jonah Tong for this year and beyond?
Yeah, he's a tough one for me because this is another dude that I've seen in person. I saw him back when he was in St. Lucie in A-ball. And when I saw him, I was like, I don't know how he's going to make this command work, because, like, he was kind of – the start that I saw of him, he was, like, pretty – kind of all over the place. Obviously, the fastball was just dominant because when you're throwing with that kind of IVB at that high of a rate in low A, like it's just gonna, that's going to play still. But yeah, the minor league stats were phenomenal, like just completely ridiculous across the board. The pitch level data was really good on all those pitches. And the concern, because I was kind of always a lower guy on him until recently, and the concern that I've always had with him is that everything is so vertical. Like if you watch him pitch, it's just up and down. Like everything is like, it's like on a, it's like pitching on a, on like a straight line, literally. Like he has nothing that has any horizontal movement to it, which is always the concern that I've had with him. Because even a slider is a gyro slider, right? Like he needs something that has some horizontal movement to it. So hopefully that's what he's working on developing right now, because I know that he has talked this offseason that he's developing new pitch. I'm not really sure what it is. I can't recall if he's come out and said what that pitch is, but I know he's working this offseason on developing something for that. So hopefully that helps him out, because underlying he had like a 173 Sierra in the minors last year. All his fastball had a 23% swing strike rate on it from the AAA data that we have on it. But when he got to the majors, everyone just sat on that fastball. That fastball got smashed, even though the characteristics are still good. Like stuff wise, movement wise, it still had really good characteristics. But a 600 slug against that fastball in the majors is really, really poor. So everyone was just sitting fastball. So he's got to figure something out. Maybe he was tipping a little bit when he got to the majors. I'm not really sure, because you don't really see a transition that poor from minor league to major league statistics. So it is a little bit concerning to me. But I think he's going to figure it out. Seems like a really smart kid, kind of a fun kid too. Like he always talk, like, I don't know if you've seen, there's like video of him talking about smelling the strikeouts. Like he like smells the baseballs. So
yeah, I did see that. Yeah, that was fun.
So he's like a fun dude too. So I hope he does figure it out. Seems like a smart guy. So I think he's going to figure it out, but like, just bear with him a little bit. He still is young. So keep that in mind, as he is a younger dude still.
Yeah, no, I had a chance to see him live as well, late in 2024 in Double A, kind of before he broke out. I mean, he had two starts in Double A, end of 2024, and he was pretty intriguing. I did not think he'd have the 2025 season that he did, but I'm also kicking myself for not getting more shares, because I saw him and I shared those similar concerns about some command, but I was like, man, this is a pretty fun pitch mix. And yeah, it's funny you mentioned everything's so vertical with him. I mean, yeah, he's got the big, like old school, like upper 70s hammer curveball. He's got the Vulcan change with a lot of depth on it. I think a sweeper or a cutter would just be like phenomenal for Jonah Thomas. So give you some of that, more of that horizontal movement. Right now he goes four seam curveball, slider, change. Like you mentioned, even the slider is more of a gyro slider. So yes, a lot of that is vertical movement. But I love the curveball. I love the changeup. Yeah, fastball did get hit a lot, but there are some good characteristics on it. So I'm not like terribly concerned. He gets really good extension, some good riding life on that four seamer. So I do think you'll see some better metrics on that this year. But it's a matter of how much time are we going to see him with the Mets this year? That's kind of the question. So for redraft, I've kind of been shying away just because of not sure about the workload for in the major leagues, but I still think Tong is going to be, could be a number two starter long term, making a nice duo there with Nolan McLean. And obviously, they got Freddie Peralta in the mix now as well, at least for 2026. So, yeah, I think Tong is still a decent long term investment. Strikeout upside is massive. Could be a 30% K rate guy in the majors. He's always been high K rate. 2023, he had a 38% K rate, 2024, 34%. And then 2025, as I mentioned, was 40.5% in the minor leagues, with some really good batting average against. So as long as he keeps that walk rate in check, keeps the fastball, improved for this upcoming year, I think Jonah Tong could be still like a top, I'll say like top 30 to 40 arm for fantasy long term. All right.
Yeah, I think so.
Just something else on Tong?
No, I was just going to say I agree with you. And I think he just needs... I agree. He needs like a cutter would be great. And even a sinker would be great. He needs like variations of that fastball just to get people from sitting on it.
Yeah, 100%. I love seeing, multiple fastball variations. you know, especially with him. Yeah, I think, yeah, getting like a pitch in the low 90s would be good. He's got the mid 90s four seamer, mid 80s change, you know, kind of like mid to upper 80s slider, upper 70s curve. If he adds another velocity band, like a 91 mile an hour cutter or something like that, you know, with that, you know, horizontal movement, I think that would be a really good pitch for Jonah Tong. But we shall see if that becomes the case.
You're a pro at running your life, at committing to your workout, at showing up every day. At Bombas, we're pros too. Pros at making socks. Our sport assortment has specialized socks for whatever sport you're committed to. Running, hiking, golf, Pilates, and so much more. Made with sweat-wicking yarns, blister-fighting details, and targeted arch support. Bombas Sport is pro-level socks from the pros of socks. For another pro, you. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code audio for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com and use code audio.
Let's move into the next set of 10 here. These are ranking 11 through 20 for us. For me, those 11 through 20 guys, I start with Andrew Painter there at number 11, who Tim had at number 10. So he's a guy that's kind of fallen from grace a little bit, but we'll talk about him here in a second. 12 through 15, I got Travis Sikora, Connolly Early, Ryan Sloan, and Cam Caminiti. 16 through 20, Harleen Susanna, Kyson Witherspoon, Liam Doyle, Jamie Arnold, and Jackson Wiggin. So a few of the FYPD guys in that range of rankings as well. Tim, who do you got 11 through 20?
I have Liam Doyle at 11, Kyson Witherspoon at 12, Harleen Susanna at 13, Jackson Wiggins 14, Ryan Sloan 15, Seth Hernandez at 16, Connolly Early 17, Logan Henderson, 18, Jamie Arnold, 19, and Carlos Lagrange at 20.
Every time I see or say his name or hear it, I always think of the ZZ Top song.
Ha, 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 ha.
Yeah, exactly. Ha, 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 ha. Well, yeah, it was fine. There we go. That's your singing from me for the day. I am not a singer, never claimed to be, but I will sing my songs. I don't care. But yeah, that's a good song. So actually, I saw ZZ Top in concerts, what year was it? 2023. It was right after they lost their bass guitarist. But it was like my dad had just beat cancer, so it was like, hey, you know, you kicked cancer's ass. Let's go see ZZ Top. They came here to Portland, Maine. It was really fun.
How long are the beards right now? Are they still like as long as they were back 20 years ago?
Oh, 100%. And I can't remember who their longtime guitar tech steps, you know, he's the new bassist in ZZ Top. I forget his name, but he just has the look as well. Like he fits in perfectly. I'm like, yep, this guy looks like he's been in ZZ Top for 50 years. But it's funny, like the one guy that doesn't have a beard in ZZ Top is the guy with beard in his name, their drummer, Frank Beard. It's like he doesn't have a beard, but his last name is Beard. It's kind of weird. But anyway, back to baseball here. Let's talk about Andrew Painter here. I had him at 11 and Tim had him at 10, so pretty similar spots. But you look at a couple years ago, this guy was pretty, by and large, the number one pitching prospect in baseball. But been a weird last few years. Like, I remember being down at First Pitch Florida in 2023. This was right after the insane 2022 year that Painter had in the minors, 103 and two-thirds innings, 22 starts. He had a 1.56 ERA, a 0.89 WHIP, 6% walk rate, and a 38.7% strikeout rate with a 180 batting average against. That was between low A, high A, and five double A starts as well. We were like drafting him in fantasy leagues that year. The hype was at a fever pitch. You know, you thought that he was going to maybe even break camp with the Phillies. There were all those rumors as well. And then obviously, you know, the elbow issues popped up. He misses two full seasons, came back, saw him in the AFL in 2024, looked good, but rusty, you know, pretty much what you expect after that long layoff. And in 2025, was it primarily in AAA with a handful of low A starts as well. And, you know, you can see he was still kind of shaking off the rust. It wasn't the greatest overall stats, 540 ERA in 118 innings. Now, K rate was down to about 23.5%, walk rate up to 9%, WHIP of 149. So just, you know, the stats weren't great. But you, when you watch him, you still see the upside there. So still have him. Both of us still have him right around the top 10. pitching prospect, but what are you making of Andrew Painter now, Tim? Like, is this someone that you're like looking to go and buy low while the price tag has kind of been depleted a little bit? So what are your thoughts here?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the price when you talk about buying low, right? Like, if the price is there, then for sure. I saw him this year too. And I'll tell you, I was definitely concerned watching him live. The fastball was just not there. Like, he was throwing it hard. He was throwing 98, 99. And I think I have video on YouTube, so you can go see it from like direct behind home plate. But I was watching him. The first inning, he threw like all fastballs.
Yeah.
And the A-ball Marlins team was, they're just on it. Like, I don't think he gave up any damage, but I just remember so many foul balls. I was like, they just keep making contact on this thing. Like, that, it's not the same fastball that it was. He was not getting swing strikes on that thing at all. And even the metrics back that up. Like, he does not have the same spin on that fastball that he had pre-TJ. Now, maybe a year later, maybe he gets the spin on that thing back. One can hope. The breaking stuff, as soon as he started throwing the breaking stuff, because the first inning when I saw him, for whatever reason, he was all fastball. Second inning, he started throwing the breaking stuff, and then he started getting strikeouts. So to me, when I saw him, and even the numbers kind of back this up, that the breaking stuff is still there. It's just the fastball. He doesn't have the spin on the fastball, and he doesn't have the same command on that fastball. He was only throwing his fastball, Eric, for a strike 45% of the time. So he's not getting swings on that thing unless it's balls in play. 8.9% swing strike rate on a fastball is not good. You know, like,
no, yeah,
it's not bad. It's subpar though. It's like a 45, right? That's maybe not even a 50 grade pitch on that fastball now. When before it was looking like a 60, 70 grade fastball pre-TJ. So he does not have the same spin on the fastball, but the rest of the pitches are still good. I mean, like, his changeup had a 28% swing strike rate on it this year when he was at A-ball and AAA from the data that we have. Slider was 19%. So all the breaking pitches, like, I still like, and I still gave him good grades on most of his breakers. The curve kind of thought was not that great. But the cutter or sweeper, whatever you want to call that one, I still think that's going to be a good pitch. The slider, I think, is still elite. The changeup is elite. It's just that fastball. If he can't find that thing, it's going to be rough because, like, pitchers without a fastball, it's tough to make it as a elite ace type pitcher without a fastball. Maybe he could be a good number two if he can't find the fastball, but he's not. I don't see an ace unless he can find that fastball somewhere.
Yeah, no, that fastball definitely is a concern. That's kind of what I was seeing with him, especially in that start out in the AFL. Like, the fastball just wasn't there. But again, I wasn't really reading much into it, given that I was like, his one of his. I feel like it was his first start or second start back in general in game action. So I wasn't kind of like, you know, hammering him too hard for that. But yeah, just watching video last year of him, I didn't have a chance to see him live last year because he's mostly in Lehigh Valley, which is like a 10-hour drive from me. But yeah, watching, you know, video on MILB TV and just on online, YouTube, whatever. Yeah, it just didn't look great. And you saw, like, you know, not a great whiff rate on that pitch, you know, gave up a lot of hard contact on the fastball. But yeah, the secondaries are still really good. Changeup, slider, curveball, like, they all had pretty good whiff rates, you know, on those offerings, especially the changeup had a 55% whiff rate on that pitch last year. So there's still a lot of upside there. But yeah, I want to see him kind of revamp the fastball. Hopefully the Phillies can kind of get that going well again. But the good thing is, like, they can afford to ease him in, you know, whether he's the number five this year or they, you know, put him back in AAA, bring him up, you know, mid-season or something like that. They have the depth and the pitching staff and the talent that they can ease him in and not have to put him in, you know, super high leverage situations. So I think they have the time to continue to develop him. And he's still, you know, he's still pretty young. He's still only 22. He'll be 23 very early in the season. So I still have hope, but yeah, I don't think he's going to be like the stud ace that we kind of thought he was going to be a few years ago. You know, having, you know, one of the best minor league pitching seasons we've ever seen back in 2022. But yeah, I think he's still be a number two, still be, you know, like a top, again, 30 to 40 fantasy arm down the road. So I'm still kind of in on Andrew Painter. Who would you rather buy low on right now? Or would you, let me rephrase, who would you rather buy right now between him and Travis Sikora, you know, given kind of where you believe the price tags are? Who do you rather go into right now?
Based on the current value, Sikora just because he's dropping so much. I'll sit on Sikora. Like I just talked about, like I hate, you know, drafting a TJ guy and sitting on him, but Sikora is let me put it this way. With F scores, the F stuff on Sikora is a 142, and the second best starter that we're going to talk about in a minute, so here's a tease, is 127. And that's a percentage. So that means his stuff is 15% better than the next best stuff pitcher in the minor leagues from 2025.
Yep. Yeah. Let me put it for me to put it simply. You know, I also say Sikora as well. And that's no slight to Painter. I've just been, you know, everyone should know I'm a super high Sikora guy. If he wasn't hurt right now and missing the entire season, the top tier of pitching prospects for me, which currently is just a tier of two with Burns and McLean, then you drop down to that second tier of Savage, Chandler, etc., it would be a tier of three with Sikora. I would have him right up there with McLean, with Burns. Like, that's how high I am on Sikora. So, yeah, it sucks that he's going to miss all this time. And, yeah, you can probably throw some durability concerns in the profile, which are already kind of there, but now even more so. So he's risky, but there aren't many pitchers on the planet with more upside than Travis Sikora. But let's go over to one of his Nationals organizational mates here in Harlene Susana, who has immense upside in his own right. I'm talking like three potential plus or better pitches, just insane stuff, insane strikeout upside, you know, but a little risky just given the, you know, the floor being a little bit lower due to super high walk rate. But, you know, last year, in 56 and a third innings, he struck out 95 batters for a 38.9% strikeout rate. But he also had a 13.9% walk rate, 131 whip, 195 batting average against. So he's another guy, you know, kind of, you know, not, I'm not comping the two, but almost can be like a right-handed version of a Thomas White, where the stuff is just so elite, you know, really good three-pitch mix there. With the fastball, you know, and slider kind of leading the way. Those are the two, you know, big offerings for him. He can hit triple digits. The slider is one of the best sliders in all of baseball, in my opinion. But just that command and control has been pretty inconsistent for him so far. So what do you make of Susana? I mean, so many, you know, he could be like one of the best closers in baseball if they end up going that route with him. He could be one of the best starters in baseball if the control improves. Or, you know, we've seen guys like him that kind of fizzle out and don't reach their potential because they can't throw strikes. So kind of how are you valuing all the pros and cons here of Susana, Tim?
All right. So I might be the biggest champion of Harlan Susana in the prospecting crowd here. I've got him at 53 overall in my rankings. And I just hinted that Sikora had a 142 F stuff and the next best score was 127. The next best score was a tie between Chase Burns and Harlan Susana. Both had a 127 F stuff. So that's how good Harlan Susana is, that his stuff is comparable to Chase Burns.
Yep.
And it's kind of the same thing, fastball slider, right? So it's like big-time fastball slider with Susana. So very similar thing. My comp that I threw on him is actually Paul Skeens light with worse command. But this is a big thing people don't realize. Susana got hurt and came back, and in his final seven starts of the season after returning from injury, Eric, he had a 0.81 Sierra with a 22.4% swinging strike rate in these starts, and he had a 50% K rate in the final seven starts of the year with a 10.9% walk rate. So he brought his walk rate down to 10.9. That's a 39.1 K minus walk rate is what he had in his final seven starts. And the bad start he had was his final start. He had three strikeouts and two walks. He tore his lat in that start. So he missed all of September because he had to get a surgery for a grade 3 lat tear, but apparently he's supposed to be healthy to start the year. So we'll see if I see him this spring down in West Palm Beach because the Nats make their home West Palm. So I'll see if I see him this spring. But that's how good he was down the stretch. Is a 50% K rate. Like this guy, he reduced the walk rate down to 10%. If he can run with a 10% walk rate, this guy's going to be a stud. I think you got worst case scenario number two starter here. With him and Sakura, or like he and Sakura in that rotation could be pretty nasty for a long time. Like, I think worst case, you're looking at like a righty Robbie Ray, where he's just like piling up strikeouts left and right. Yeah, maybe he walks too many guys some seasons, but I think he's going to be just very hard to deal with, like a strikeout master, like 250 strikeouts a year.
Yeah, he's an absolute beast. If he can stay healthy, and he's had the elbow issue last year, the UCL sprain, and you mentioned the lat tear, which, you know, who knows, you know, when he's 100%, if it's going to be, you know, opening day or, you know, a little bit after that, right? The upside is massive, but, you know, also some injury risk, some walk risk here with Susanna. But yeah, the stuff is just so damn good. Like, he's one of my favorite pitchers to watch. And I agree, like, him and Sakura could form a really, really dynamic, you know, future 1-2 for that Washington Nationals organization, who their rotation now is already bad. And then they trade away Mackenzie Gore. And now their rotation basically, which I think I use this GIF. Conor McGregor, like, who the fuck is that guy? GIF. Like, that's like their entire rotation right now. Like, who's their number one? Like, Kate Devalle or Brad Lord or someone like that right now. So, yeah, that rotation, terrible. Probably the second worst behind the Rockies. But they got a couple of very high upside arms here. But with some risks, so hopefully, you know, the Nats are really banking on Sakura and Susanna, you know, being that future 1-2 for them. So, yeah, I have Susanna at, oh, where is he in my overall? 77 right now in my overall. So I still have him a little bit lower than you, but I have Sakura at 52 and Susanna at 79. But again, if Sakura wasn't hurt, he might be top 10 overall for me right now. That's how high I am on him. So I have Savage at 12, White 15, Chandler 19, and he'd be ahead of Savage. Yeah, good chance he'd be top 10, and I have Burns and McLean 3-4. Real quick on the, you know, the F stuff, Tim, where's McLean rank on the F stuff?
He's at a 108 F stuff. So that's for major league. So obviously when we were talking about the other guys that we were talking about minor league, I've got a major league F stuff of Burns is, and this is kind of funny. Burns is a 127 minors and a 127 majors. So he literally, it translated like 1-to-1 for him.
Yeah, immediately. Yep.
So,
nice.
Yeah. Yep.
Good stuff there. No pun intended. Last guy I wanted to get into in this 11 through 20 range, a guy that you're very high on, in Logan Henderson, who you had, where did you have him in your overall? 18 among pitching prospects, right between Connelly Early and Jamie Arnold. So very high. Maybe one of the higher rankings I've seen on Logan Henderson, who's a guy who looks like he's, you know, should be in that rotation to start the season, getting a chance, that, especially with Freddie Peralta out of town. You know, looks like Henderson will be in that rotation, assuming he has a decent spring. Last year, you know, pretty good year overall in AAA, 3.59 ERA in 77 and two-thirds innings. With 87 strikeouts to 24 walks, and then five starts with Milwaukee, 25 and a third innings, pretty solid 1.78 ERA, 33 Ks to eight walks. So, you know, overall, you know, 121 strikeouts to 32 walks in 103 combined innings between AAA and the majors last year. So the production has been there. So what do you see from Henderson, Tim, that has you having him right now as a top 20 overall pitching prospect?
He has elite control, which is pretty obvious. Under one whip for a rookie is insane. I really don't understand what the Brewers were doing by, like, I know
that was, that was a really weird decision for sure.
Yeah. I mean, like, he kind of reminds me, and like different pitches, so different skill set, but he kind of reminds me of like when Bryce Miller came up, like just like under one whip, like really good command, only a couple pitches. The concern for Logan Henderson was, oh, he's a fastball changeup guy, and that's all he's got, right? Like, that was always the concern with him coming up, which I give him a 65 grade on that fastball and a 70 grade on that changeup. Fastball is, you know, he can get up to 96 on it, really good IVB. The changeup is elite. That's one of the better changeups in baseball. The fastball had a 16% swing strike rate on it, which is 96th percentile in the majors. So two really good pitches here, but that's not all he is. He mixed in a cutter and a sinker that he didn't really throw in the minors very much. But a slider too. The slider, not as good, but the cutter was actually very successful. He only uses it against lefties, but he had almost a 16% swing strike rate on that cutter, and that gets up to 88. And he's been using that against lefties to help differentiate and, I guess, like bridge his pitches a little bit. And he's having success on it. So it's helping him be able to not just get, you know, have hitters just sit on that fastball by mixing these other pitches in. So that cutter, kind of underrated here against lefties. Against righties, he's been throwing a sinker and a slider. The slider is not that great. Pretty bad pitch, actually, really, but at least it helps him mix something else in. But maybe he develops something else to get use against righties, because against lefties, I think he's pretty set with the cutter, fastball, changeup. But if he can get something else in there against righties, maybe better than that slider, maybe he can change the slider a little bit, tinker with it this offseason, then I think we're really rocking and rolling here. And he's not just a two-pitch guy. He's got variations of these other little pitches that might only get like 2-5% overall that he's using, because he is still very dominant fastball changeup, but at least it's something else that hitters have to look at, and it's working. So I think Henderson is pretty underrated, kind of a crafty guy, smaller guy. Like, I love the smaller dudes too when they work, especially like when you're throwing from a lower release point with high IVB like that. That is like proven to work. We see that from a lot of these like shorter major league pitchers. That pitch just works.
Yeah, even given the, you know, the velocity being kind of, you know, middle of the road, around 93 miles an hour, you have 17 inches of induced vertical break there. I've been, you know, I kind of take a lot of that what you just said, and that's kind of how I've been feeling. Where, you know, I am always a little leery of the fastball changeup guys. Like, we saw like Drew Thorpe, a recent example of that. I was never super high on Drew Thorpe, though I do like Henderson right now more than I liked Thorpe at the same kind of point of his development. But, you know, I do wonder, like, you know, where's the K rate upside with him? You know, he did strike out a bunch of guys, you know, in the majors last year, 33 in 25 innings, you know, changeup in fastball accounting for 32 of those 33 strikeouts. So just another, really just a thing I have with a lot of these dominant two pitch guys, whether it's four seam slider, four seam changeup, whatever. It's like, what if one of those pitches is not working on that any, you know, any given day? So I get kind of concerned about that. So yeah, I would love to see him, you know, that's cutter, slider, or, you know, whether it's one of those two, whether it's a, you know, a curveball, a sweeper, just, I want to see a third offering he can get strikeouts with. That's kind of where I'm at with Henderson. I like Henderson. I don't love Henderson, just because I'm not usually not a guy that goes after these fastball changeup guys in general. But yeah, you know, I do like the, you know, I think he could be a good like mid rotation guy, number three starter for Milwaukee. And you mentioned, you know, kind of a, you know, good walk rate guy. He always kind of has been. So I think he's got a pretty solid floor as well. And even if he's more of like a 25% K rate guy, you know, as opposed to a 30 plus, you know, I think he can still be a guy that gives you a good volume, you know, some solid ratios and a decent enough strikeout rate. So yeah, definitely some intrigue here. I'm not as quite as high on him as you are, but I can see why you're high on him. There's definitely some good characteristics here with Logan Henderson. So let's move on to 21 through 30 in our pitching prospect rankings. Who do you got in these slots, Tim?
I've got Gage Jump at 21, Luis Perales at 22, Travis Sikora at 23, Tyler Bremner 24, Daniel Egan 25, Owen Murphy 26, Hagen Smith 27, Cam Caminiti 28, Rhett Lauder 29, and Michael Fourette as 30.
I like Fourette. You know, he's a nice little, you know, underrated pitching prospect, I think, right now. But 21 through 30 for me, and Fourette's just outside my top 30. But 21 through 30 for me is Noah Schultz, Caden Scarborough, who I just actually acquired in the Dynasty League not too long ago, Gage Jump, Kendry Churio, and Elmer Rodriguez at 25. And then 26 through 30 is Hagen Smith, David Shields, Brandon Sproat, Ricky Tiedemann, and Alejandro Rosario, who is also missing the entire year after missing all of 2025 as well, because he waited to have surgery for some freaking reason. But, man, Rosario would be a guy. I'm not going to really get on him, but he'd be a guy that might be top 10 for me right now if he wasn't hurt. I mean, really good stuff, really good command and control, but just missing two full years and now going to be 24, 25 years old. That's kind of a bummer. But let's start with the White Sox guys here. you know, Hagen Smith, and you don't have Noah Schultz, but I kind of wanted to group him in here with Hagen Smith, because I feel like the perceived value and just like the rankings on these two in general both dropped in 2025 for various reasons, you know, whether it be missing time, you know, command and control, you know, just the overall results, or, you know, various combinations of those three. So now I think they've gone from guys that were elite pitching prospects to, you know, fun upside guys with some notable concerns. Let's start with Noah Schultz here. Let's start with Hagen Smith. We both have him in our top 30. And he had a really high strikeout rate this past year, 33.9% in 75 and two thirds innings, 357 ERA, 164 batting average against. So he's really hard to, you know, make good contact off of. But he had a 17.6% walk rate. So that's major, major concern with him. And he's kind of a more of a two-pitch guy too, fastball slider. Never really got a good feel for his changeup and command control. Just really, really poor. So I think I'm much lower on him than most. And then Noah Schultz, who was maybe a top five, top 10 pitching prospect for most entering the season. He had some injuries, went to a 4.68 ERA this year. Walk rate went way up. K rate went way down. So he's kind of fallen off a cliff in terms of rankings. But how do you value these two guys? And are you looking to buy either Hagen Smith or Noah Schultz? Or at this point, are you kind of going to let them be someone else's problem?
I have zero shares of both of these guys. And if I was to have one, it would probably be Hagen. The good thing about Hagen Smith is, at least worst case scenario, he would be like a dominant elite reliever. Like, yeah, you know,
Josh Hader type reliever. Yeah.
Yeah. They're closer Sir Anthony. So it's like, you know, he is so good against lefties. This is funny for Hagen Smith, his splits. He had a 107 Sierra against lefties, 472 against righties. His walk rate against lefties is only 10%. Walk rate against righties is 20%. So like K minus walk against lefties was like 37% with a 20% over 20% swing strike rate. It's just so weird, Eric. He has a 55% strike rate against lefties and 35% ball rate. But then against righties, he has a 41% strike rate and a 46% ball rate. So he's so bad against righties that he's throwing more balls than strikes. His K minus walk against righties is only 4%. So very, very bad against righties, but this guy destroys lefties. Yeah. I guess the good news is like he was pretty good in the fall league, and there was like increased command in the fall league. So it's like, okay, maybe there's like light at the end of the tunnel. He wasn't that bad walk rate wise in college in his like one elite season that he had. So it's like, okay, there is like some light here at the end of the tunnel. So I guess I am a little more hopeful in Smith. So if I had to have one, it would be him. But like, I'm not really like super in on him. I've got him at 83. So it's like, I don't know where everyone else has him ranked, but I'm probably, I don't know, middle of the pack or like lower end of rankings for him. Like, I'm not very high on him. And Noah Schultz, he might be barely in my top 200. Like he didn't make my 150 cut. That's how out I am on Schultz right now, because like the one thing that he had really going for him was elite command until this year. And then the command just fell off a cliff. So I don't know. The White Sox probably need to bring in like a new guy to run their pitching development at this point, because it's like they had all these guys, right? They had all these really good pitching prospects, and really like none of them have turned out. You know, Grant Taylor's a reliever now. And what happened to Iriarte? Like Iriarte is like gone now. Like he just fell off a cliff. So they brought in all these prospects. They had all these elite pitching prospects, and like not a single one has worked out since Crochet. It's like the one guy that actually made it, and like the rest of these guys, they've just not been able to develop. So they need to do something on the development side and fix their development team, because they're not doing a very good job.
Yeah, to their credit, you know, I think, you know, Christian Oper and Tanner McDougal did kind of have some solid years and rose up rankings. But yeah, a lot of their guys that are like the older, you know, closer to ready guys, you know, like Schultz, Smith, you know, Thorpe, Iriarte, it's all kind of didn't do well this year for various reasons. You know, with though Smith and Schultz, I don't know. I'm lower on most on them than most. You know, not quite as low as you on Schultz, I have him, you know, near my top 100. I'm willing to give him a little bit of a pass, just given the fact that he was, you know, hurt for a good chunk of last year. Though at the same time, I'm not as high in him as I once was, and I wasn't even as high as most on Schultz entering the year either. And I think a lot of places still have him top 100 overall. I actually kind of pissed off some White Sox fans when I didn't have him in my top 100, and they were kind of, you know, all upset about it. But you know, I want to see how he bounces back this year before dropping him further down. So as I still see a decent pitcher in here with Schultz. I want to see if does that command come back? Does the stuff tick back up? You know, with a fully healthy year. But with Hagen Smith, I mean, it's like those concerns I mentioned where it's, yeah, those are super elite two pitches, but not really a third pitch right now, not any sort of good command and control. It's just really poor this year. Like, that's a really bad walk rate. He's starting to give me some DL Hall vibes a little bit. The Hall did have a third pitch, but just couldn't locate anything. So I'm kind of wondering if Smith goes down the DL Hall route where he's just a reliever. Long term, though, I agree, he could be a really good one and a back end reliever for this White Sox team. But just given those concerns I have, that's why I can't put him top 100 right now. But I'm probably not going to, I don't have any shares of Schultz or Smith and probably won't unless they're, you know, super cheap, which they usually aren't. So yeah, I'm not rushing out to get either Smith or Schultz right now. But
yeah.
I just want to see, can Schultz get back healthy and get back to his old ways? Can Smith drop the walk rate? So there'll be two guys I'm really following closely in 2026 for sure, though.
Something to keep in mind with Schultz is even in 2024, when he had a 25% K minus walk rate, his swing strike rate was still only 11.8%. So like, he's always run low swing strike rates. So I'm not sure his stuff was ever really that great. I think he was just getting by on like good command and his extension. And now he doesn't even have the good command. So it's like, for him to be good, he has to have like elite command for it to work for him, which was kind of like his freakish thing. He was like 6'10" and he wasn't walking anybody. And that's just weird. And it's in and of itself. So it's like, I feel like he needs to have command to have success, because even when he was striking guys out, it wasn't based on like swinging strikes.
Yeah. Yeah. He, if I recall, he didn't have super high swing strike rates either. Right. I think he was more like, if I recall, I might be way off on this, like 12%. Actually, wait a minute, let me pull it
less
up here.
That's what I just said. 11.8 in 2024. Okay. So less than 12%.
He actually had a higher swing and strike rate last year, 12.4%. So it did go up a little bit, oddly enough. But yeah, not like Susanna, I think, was like 16% or something like that. Just, you know, kind of a 4 or 5% gap there, which, you know, for swing and strike rate, that's a pretty sizable gap for sure. Next thing I had on the outline, which we kind of already looped into the, you know, when we talking about Susanna, I kind of looped in Sakura there. But one other Nats prospect, as we already talked to, they have a third one with some pretty good upside. I mean, neither one of us had him in our top 30, but I wanted to at least talk about him since we have talked about Susanna and Sakura. And that's Luis Perales, who they got from the Red Sox in the Jake Bennett trade. The guy that this elite electric fastball, you know, good, you know, secondaries with, you know, slider and splitter as well. But just a guy that has missed a lot of time. You know, only really has like, what, 36 or so combined innings over the last 2 years. But the upside is massive, but so is the downside. So do you have any intrigue here in Luis Perales, Tim?
Yeah, actually, I had Perales at 22 on the list.
Oh, you did have a 22. I glossed over him, my bad.
I put him in my rankings as 71, and that was before the Red Sox traded him. Because I really like this stuff, right? Like, I really love the metrics that we have on all his stuff. And he always looks really good watching him pitch. And he was awesome before the TJ. And so, like, I was pretty high on him. And then the Red Sox traded him for, like, a middling prospect. I'm like, now I'm kind of scared. I'm like, oh, maybe I'm ranked too high now. Because if the Red Sox obviously didn't trust this return, like, maybe there's something in, like, the physicals or, the injury reports or something that we don't know about that they know about. So I'm just like, I'm a little more timid on him now after the trade. But, yeah, I mean, like, fastball gets up to 101. I had a 60 potential 70 grade on that fastball for him. The splitter I put a 60-65 on. So yeah, really good pitches. I'm a big fan of Perales when he's healthy, but now, like, after the trade, I'm like, is there something we don't know about here? So like, it kind of scares me because the Red Sox are usually a pretty smart team. At least they have been recently, you know, pretty recently in the last 4 or 5 years, especially with their prospects. They seem to know their prospects pretty well. They know which ones that they want to keep. They know which ones they want to trade. So like, I'm a little concerned actually after that trade, because like, I like Perales way better than Bennett. And so I'm like, oh, 1-1, that's kind of weird. So I am slightly concerned post that trade.
Yeah. I echo that, because you know, as a Red Sox fan, that trade was very odd. Like, yeah, Jake Bennett is a type of pitcher that, you know, this front office kind of likes. So I'm not surprised that they were targeting Bennett per se. It was more so that they were just so willing to give up Perales, who just came back. You know, he was pitching out in Arizona. Like, he just came back and like, oh, hey, you're gone. I'm like, yeah. So I was like, do they have some concerns there? You know, that's, maybe we don't know about, bigger concerns than I thought they had on him. Yeah, because there's definitely that downside with him, given, you know, the fact that he's had a hard time staying healthy the last couple of years. But the stuff is just so electric. But I'm going to say this, and this might be, I don't know, a hot take or whatever you want to call it. I'm going to say that in 2027 fantasy baseball drafts, we are drafting Luis Perales as a top 20 reliever. Like, I think this is a guy that goes to the pen at some point later this year, you know, grabs a dozen saves in the second half of the season with a super high K rate, kind of like almost, you know, like a what Palencia did with the Cubs this year. In fact, we're drafting Palencia as like an RP2 this year. I think that's kind of what's going to happen with Perales. I think he's going to be their closer of the future. Really, and I think he could be an absolutely dominant closer. Like, I think this guy could be eventually an RP1 for fantasy purposes. Like, that, the stuff is that good. He's still only 22 years old. He'll be 23 early on in the season. But yeah, I just have concerns that if he can handle the starter's workload. I mean, I don't think there's like massive command and control concerns here, though. The walk rate has been, you know, not super great, you know, at times. But I think the bigger concern I have is just, can he hold up as a starter? Yeah, the command and control is a bit of a concern. It'd be foolish not to be, but more so, like, I just don't know if he can hold up for 30-plus starts. I really don't. So I'll say that, RP2, 2027, Luis Perales. But let's move on to the last little question here, which I think is a fun one, given the fact that so many of our top arms are likely going to graduate this year from prospect rankings. I mean, you look at, you know, Burns and McLean are going to graduate like super early this year. I mean, Burns kind of technically already has. You know, Yesavage probably going to graduate. Chandler likely will graduate. Tong probably will at some point this year. Same with like Peyton Tolley. You know, Thomas White probably gets 50 innings this year. I mean, that's not a definite, but let's assume he graduates as well. That's like, you know, most of the top 10 right there. So looking ahead to 2027, a year from now, who do you think is going to be the number one pitching prospect in baseball, Tim? There are some fun candidates here. I have my locked in number one guy with a couple other guys that could do it. But who do you have as your number one pitching prospect 1 year from today?
It's kind of a cheat code because we talked about him so much already. But it's going to be Travis Sikora, right? Like, he's going to be healthy by that point. So it's almost like an automatic. So that's a bit of a cheat code. So without the cheat code, I'm going to go that it's going to be one of the drafted guys, the 2025 draft guys. It's going to be one of like Cade Anderson or Liam Doyle or Kyson Witherspoon, depending on like who debuts and who doesn't. So I would go like Anderson or Doyle, or even under the radar from the 2025 draft, it might be Seth Hernandez. Like, once we actually get some data on Seth Hernandez, he's going to be in A-ball. He's going to be in Florida. So we're going to get Florida State League data on him, which means we're going to get pitch level data for him too. Hopefully I'll get to see him. So once he debuts and we actually get pitch level stuff from him, he could just be a guy who just like zooms, just like Painter, right? Like he could be a guy who just zooms all the way up. Like when Painter did, when Painter was coming out of high school. So I think it's going to be, if it's like, you know, without the cheat code of Sikora, it's going to be one of these draft guys. Like, put it on Cade Anderson, Liam Doyle, Kyson Witherspoon, or Seth Hernandez.
Yeah, no, Sikora obviously is a great one there, and obviously I'm super high on him. I just wonder, like, you know, with him coming off injury, if he gets back up to that number one, you know, ranking, I think he absolutely could. But the guy I kind of honed in on the most is actually Seth Hernandez. I think this, there's ace upside. Again, I hate throwing on that term, but there's ace upside with Seth Hernandez. I mean, the stuff is just so ridiculous. He's got really good, you know, command for his age, really good feel for pitching. He good feel for his changeup, good feel for, you know, spin. He's got a couple good breaking balls too. Like, you know, fastball velocity is there. Like, there's a lot of exciting traits with Seth Hernandez. So him and Socorro are gonna be my two front runners for that. You know, Keith Anderson, I think, could be up there as well if he doesn't, you know, debut midseason for Seattle, which he absolutely could. If he's still eligible, Keith Anderson would be up there as well. You know, I would give a nod to like a Ryan Sloan. I think he's got a really good upside there. I can see Sloan getting up there. I agree. Some of the other draftees, like Witherspoon's a guy that I love the upside, love the arm talent. And if Boston unlocks him, like, you know, with all the breakout guys they had last year, you could easily see Witherspoon being one of the, you know, three or five best pitching prospects in baseball coming into 2027. And I'll throw another just a dark horse, a guy, again, I just traded for in Dynasty League not too long ago. I love Keaton Scarborough a good bit too, so I could see him jumping way up rankings too. So, yeah, a lot of fun upside guys here. And the top of pitching prospect rankings next year is going to look a lot different than this year, given all the graduations upcoming. And that's going to wrap us up. Tim, thank you so much for joining me. Always a pleasure talking with you. What do you got going on over in the MLB data warehouse?
Oh, we've just been releasing rankings. So I've been posting my rankings, slow dripping them on X if you want them for free. It's going to be a pain in the butt to try to collect them that way. If you actually want them like in a nice organized way, you can pay for it over there. $29.99 for my prospect package. It's going to give you all my rankings, and it gives you a bunch of draft cheat sheets too for Dynasty and stuff like that. So if you want my cheat sheets, they have F scores on all of them, and it's all heat mapped with F scores. So if you're into the F scores and you want to use them for drafting purposes, that's a nice, easy way to get it, you know, less than a lunch out right now to get all that data. And also we're doing, Doc and I have been doing positional rankings for Dynasty, getting some ringers on to do some prospect stuff. So I'll be reaching out to you soon to try to get you onto one of these episodes here. I had Owen Hurt on recently, Jeff Potts. So a lot of stuff going on over on the podcast side.
Awesome. Yeah, absolutely. Check out Tim's stuff. He puts a lot of effort into it, a lot of great stuff. Again, on Twitter/X at Fantasy Aceball, the Prospect Data Warehouse, check that out. You know, he links all that in his bio and various posts as well. And check out all of my stuff. All my rankings are live. My redraft rankings, Prospect, Dynasty, FYPD, all updated within the last couple of weeks over on my Patreon, toolshipfantasy.com. Check out Rotoballer. Again, promo code NEW, 30% off there. A lot of great stuff in the premium package. And I'll be back with you again later this week for the SP Dynasty episode. But until then, everyone take care.
Calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation.
You chose style. Bombas has styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.